welcome to the 2QB Experience. This is episode one of this podcast. We're calling this one the Cam Newton Experience. My name is Greg Smith. On the line with me, Josh Lake, Sal Stefanelli. What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing good. Yourself?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Josh?
Doing well. Glad to be here.
We are the co-founders of 2QBs.com. You got to spell it out, unfortunately, on the site, TWOQBS.com. And we're going to be bringing you this podcast throughout the offseason into the regular season. It is the week before the Super Bowl here in 2016. And I mentioned Cam Newton in the opening. We'll get to him later. But why don't you guys give us a quick introduction to yourselves, and I'll follow that up by introducing myself afterwards.
Sure. I'm Joshua Lake. I'm on Twitter at Lake2QBs. And since I've been on Twitter and writing anything about fantasy football, it's been about two quarterback leagues. That's what I've played in for the last decade. Although I technically played other formats for a year or two, kind of figuring things out, really the bulk of my experience has been in two quarterback leagues. So I am very excited to have a group of guys, and maybe one day girls, but at least guys right now, writing about the two quarterback format. So this is good stuff.
And I'm Sal Stefanelli. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. Just like Josh, the majority of my fantasy playing career has been in the two quarterback format. I hated it at first because I didn't know who all these backup quarterbacks were or who a majority of the starters were at the time, so I wasn't really into football as much. But then the deeper I got into the research and getting to learn about backup quarterbacks and third stringers, it just made playing two quarterback formats that much more fun because you do have to dig a little bit deeper. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to be able to start this new site with a bunch of other two quarterback enthusiasts.
Yeah, and I'm Greg Smith, at Greg Sauce on Twitter. I started playing two quarterback leagues basically out of necessity. We had eight people, in my home league, and we realized very quickly that eight people with only eight starting quarterbacks was not quite enough. So we added that second QB spot, and, it was off to the races from there. I've since, grown that league to a 10-teamer consistently since, I think, 2001, 2002, something like that. And played in all sorts of other 2QB and Superflex leagues. That's how I got my start. And yeah, really excited about the new site. Aside from the three of us, we got a bunch of other great two quarterback writers who I'm sure you'll be familiar with if this is your preferred fantasy format. But with that, let's get away from ourselves. Let's talk about next year. Let's talk about 2016. And I want to kind of springboard off of an article that you wrote for the site launch, Sal, and this is three 2QB things we will learn in 2016. And I urge everybody who's listening to read it. It's a really fantastic read. And we don't need to dive into the specifics of this. But with that said, I kind of want to get your guys' idea about what matters to you coming out of 2015, coming out of 2016 for 2QB and Superflex leagues. Sal, why don't you start us off? I mean, you wrote the piece. You don't have to, go too deep, but what are you interested in this offseason?
This offseason, I'm going to be really interested to see how two quarterback ADP pans out, especially in terms of like the mid-tier and late-round quarterbacks, just because I feel like we're getting more and more viable options later in the drafts. Like that late-round quarterback mentality is sort of find its way to two quarterback and super flex leagues, and I'm always a guy that tends to look for value when it comes to fantasy drafts, especially at the quarterback position, because I think that's where we can get the biggest advantage. Because while there might be only one Aaron Rodgers or one Le'Veon Bell or one Antonio Brown, I do think we can find the type of production at quarterback that we could get out of an Aaron Rodgers just at a cheaper price. But I'm not sure we can find that at the running back or wide receiver position. So I'm going to be really intrigued to see like just how that ADP shapes out and like who are going to be the guys in the mid rounds that we might be able to target. Like last year, Carson Palmer was like the 18th quarterback off the draft board based on Josh's ADP from Fake Pigskin. So it's like, who's going to be in that range this year? And I think it's going to be more like the veteran types, like Alex Smith, he's usually there. And Joe Flacco coming off his injury is going to be someone who I'm going to really be interested to see just how late he's going to go, because I think he could be a real value pick next year.
So who do you want to be there the most when it comes to next season and drafts? Like, who's the quarterback that you're hoping slides a little bit further because you like him more or you think he's undervalued already?
I don't really have a preference because I mainly just alter my draft strategy to what is available, like what is coming at me in the draft per se. But like I said, I've always been an Alex Smith guy just because I always find he's undervalued. People don't really appreciate him. And you know, his rushing stats always boost up his fantasy production. And I think it's going to be the same thing this year. I don't think he's going to go too high off the board, unlike someone like Kirk Cousins, who you know, was undrafted last year, finished as a QB1 this year. And I think he's got a lot of hype attached to his name. So I think he's going to be someone who will be drafted a little bit earlier. So I tend to stay away from like those sexier names and just kind of go for like the boring guys that nobody wants because they're just going to be there and I can just you know, take advantage of that value.
Yeah, I got to live that dream with Ryan Fitzpatrick in a lot of different leagues this year. It was amazing. Josh, how about you? Are there any you know, mid-level quarterbacks that you're looking to take advantage of next year in drafts?
Yeah, at this point, I agree with what Sal said, that a lot of times the unsexy picks are where you can really find value in two quarterback leagues. And I think what's going to be interesting is that, at least as of right now in February, it's looking like some of those unsexy names are going to be the former top 10s, the Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford, maybe Eli Manning. Some of the guys that we're used to seeing as kind of high picks, right now the narrative around them is these guys aren't as good as they used to be and they may fall. And I think all of those three, if they fall to the right range, becomes really interesting for me. Sure, it looks like there's a possibility Calvin Johnson retires and that hurts Stafford. Matt Ryan had a really rough year. There's reasons to be concerned, but at some point they fall so far that you take the value even if you have questions. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see where guys like that shape up because there are so many young quarterbacks who are really jumping the ranks so quickly. The guys like the Kirk Cousins or Blake Bortles, guys who are very quickly moving high up. It's pushing some old favorites down the list. And so I'll be interested to see exactly where they fall.
Yeah, those younger guys, the guys who have, you know, just now ascended, Blake Bortles, Tyrod Taylor, the guys who are going to, you know, creep into the top 10, top 12 of drafts next year. Those are probably the biggest potential landmines. I mean, a guy like Carson Palmer is the type of player who, because of his age and, you know, injury history, could be a landmine, if only because he might get hurt a little more often than a younger player. With that said, there is something a little bit safer about Carson Palmer. You can trust him because you've seen him do it before. It'll be really interesting to see how the value of guys like Tyrod and Bortles compare to a lot of those veterans, and that is the, you know, the whole impetus of this discussion. One guy that I'm finding might be a little undervalued, to at least personally to me, is Jameis Winston, and he is one of those younger players, but we see these quarterbacks make pretty big leaps sometimes from year one to year two, you know, Derek Carr, so on and so forth. Winston's an interesting case to me because he has the weapons there to succeed. I'm really interested to see where he goes next year in drafts, if only because there are so many reliable veteran types and other, you know, young quarterbacks like Bortles, like Mariota, who probably have a little bit more hype, it seems. I don't know if that's fair or not to Winston. What do you guys think?
I'm a big fan of Winston, particularly for two quarterback leagues, because as a rookie where he had some really poor throws and some bad decisions, he had an incredible floor this year. And that's a remarkable thing to have at your QB2 position. And so I'm very interested if he falls outside the top 12, if he starts rising up into the QB1 price range, which right now it doesn't look like, but you never know over the coming months. That's where I'm going to have a little more concern just because he hasn't shown really the upside I would look for as a QB1. But if people are devaluing him and thinking of him as kind of this boring, low-end, young guy, then I'll be very interested if I can get him as a second quarterback.
Yeah, like Greg was mentioning, I think age does play a factor in it. And with Winston specifically, you know, last year it was him and Mariota coming in. Like, they were the two hyped rookies. And just looking at your ADP again from last year, Josh, no, Winston was going much higher than Mariota. Winston had an ADP of QB 20, where Mariota had the QB 27 ADP. And I think if Mariota had played a full healthy season, you know, with how he is playing better on later in the year, we saw some of the rushing potential that was kind of hidden. He probably would have like surpassed Winston in terms of hype for this offseason, in terms of draft strategy. But I think because Winston, no, he played the whole year. You know, he had over 20 touchdowns. He threw for 4,000 yards. You know, he has Mike Evans. I'm not sure if Vincent Jackson is still under contract or if he's a free agent. We're all waiting for Austin Seferian Jenkins to play like a full healthy 16 games. Like, the potential is there for Winston to, you know, be drafted like as a mid-tier QB2, but finish as like a low-end QB1, which, you know, he was pretty close to doing this year in his rookie campaign. So, like, I'm kind of excited to see Jameis Winston for like the second year in that offense. And I think at this point, like, he has a chance to, you know, outproduce whatever his ADP is going to be this offseason, just because I don't think that many people are going to be clamoring to, you know, draft Winston over other names that they might be able to get in that same range.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of this draft strategy when it comes to quarterbacks in two QB leagues comes down to finding guys that are just straight undervalued. And it doesn't really matter what your approach is in the draft, whether you're trying to take, you know, a star quarterback in the early rounds, like round 1, 2, or 3, you almost always have to supplement your early quarterback picks with, you know, your second QB or backup QBs that are still going to have at least some amount of value throughout the season. And I do think Winston kind of fits that bill for a guy who might be undervalued just because there are so many other guys in that tier that or many people will draft behind or draft ahead of him, excuse me. Digging a little deeper, are there any guys that maybe had a disappointing 2015 that you're looking forward to as potential values for next year? The one guy that's coming to mind for me is like Ryan Tannehill. Like, he had a lot of expectations this season, and whether it was the coaching staff or not, I do think that there's a lot of room for him to kind of take that leap maybe next year, a year late. Is there anybody like that for you too? It doesn't have to be Tannehill, but players that maybe due to injury or other reasons you expect to be, you know, below the radar next season?
I think for myself, Joe Flacco is a name I've kind of circled, mainly because of the injury and people kind of just forgot about him. And there's already like a negative stigma attached to Joe Flacco's name in fantasy circles to begin with, where like nobody wants to draft
Joe I don't Flacco. Want to draft Joe Flacco. I hate Joe Flacco.
Exactly. That's how a lot of people think. But no, he only played, I believe, 11 games this year, but he was a top 12 fantasy quarterback 5 times. No, Steve Smith is going to be coming back. They have those two young tight ends. Kamar Aiken, kind of, no, he played well. No, the running backs are always involved in the passing game. So I think Joe Flacco, because of his injury and the fact that his name is Joe Flacco, he's going to be not drafted highly into quarterback leagues. And I think that's going to be kind of a big mistake, because if he comes back fully healthy in that offense, there's a chance where he can become a fantasy quarterback 1.
Yeah, I think Joe Flacco is an interesting name. I think Jay Cutler is probably in a similar category, that people have a very negative view of him, and he has very real potential. I'll be even more interested if Alshon Jeffrey comes back to the team. It remains to be seen where he's going to end up. But Cutler has some very strong weeks and has a lot of potential and has really become a lot more reliable than his stereotyped kind of not caring persona or stigma has suggested. And he's one where I don't think that he has any shot at QB1 upside personally, but I don't think that he's anywhere even close to that sort of price. He's falling down lower than QB2 range. I think he's likely to fall outside the top 24 in a lot of drafts. And depending, like I said, on what Alshon Jeffrey does, I think that could end up being a pretty strong value.
Yeah, and his seasonal floor tends to be pretty good, Cutler's. Yeah, I like that pick too. I think you and I have a similar mindset on where we expect him to land next season. I want to throw out one other name before we get on to the aforementioned Cam Newton. And this is only because he came up in the news recently as wanting to get out of his current situation. That's Colin Kaepernick. Now, there were cries, you know, during the season of, oh, maybe the Niners should trade Kaepernick to the Eagles so that he could work with Kelly. And now Chip Kelly has come to San Francisco, and now Colin Kaepernick wants out. I don't know if that's based on the coaching decision at all, or if he's just, you know, sick of playing in the red and gold. But what do you guys expect for Kaepernick next year?
It's kind of hard for me personally to talk about Kaepernick's 2016 if I don't know where he's going to be playing. So I think it's going to be a big part of his fantasy appeal. If he stays in San Francisco and he stays in Chip Kelly's offense and he is the starter, you know, from the offseason through training camp through preseason, with no, we've seen his upside. Like, it's like it could be the QB1. That's the type of upside he has with his game. But until we have a clear situation on where he's going to play, I don't really feel comfortable trying to project that at this moment.
Yeah, I'm very pessimistic about Colin Kaepernick, and I think this, we're not talking particularly about dynasty, but this is kind of weird to say, but I'm much more interested in him in a two quarterback dynasty than I am for redraft this year, just because in dynasty I tend to roster four or five quarterbacks, and I would love to have him just somewhere stashed on a bench, wait and see, maybe he works, maybe he doesn't. In redraft, my fear is that his potential is going to be so alluring that someone's going to want to pay a decent price for him. And I just don't like taking on so much risk, even though we know the upside is there. That speaks, I guess, more to how I draft quarterbacks, but I want something that I know a little more about, because I don't want to have to roster four quarterbacks. I want to have people I can rely on a little more than that. And sure, maybe his situation shapes up, maybe he gets a clear starting spot, then I'll be more interested. But if you're talking an early draft for some reason, but just with what we know here in February, I'm pretty down on him right now.
Yeah, it does seem like his range of outcomes is about as wide as it gets. Yeah. And that a lot of that depends on what Sal was talking about with where he lands or, you know, doesn't land if he stays put. It also, yeah, depends on just how good is he really. We've seen both extremes. We've seen him be terrible and we've seen him be really good. I tend to lean towards the pessimistic side like the two of you. It's probably not great podcast/radio that we're agreeing so much on these guys, but he is a guy that I'm wary of, and I don't think a move to another team is necessarily the solution. I think that if anything, his current situation would be good if he stayed there. I find it fascinating that he wants to leave. I wish I knew more about that story, but you know, we don't, and it's early enough that we're going to have plenty of time to see it play out. I have one other kind of general question looking forward to next season. It is early. We're talking in February about fantasy football. That doesn't start until September.
I mean, how awesome is that? We haven't even had the Super Bowl for one season. We're talking about the next season. That's a great thing.
It's the grind, man. You just got to keep living it. But yeah, I kind of want to talk more generally about your draft strategy for next year. Not specific players, but one of the things that the site has, and this was on Sal's old site, and we kind of ported it over because it was so great, is this description of the three typical draft strategies in a two-quarterback league. You have your early-round quarterback strategy, you have your late-round quarterback strategy, and then you have a studs and streaming strategy where maybe you get one really good quarterback and then you wait to pick up you know, some flyer guys in the mid to late rounds. Do you guys have a leaning one way or the other going into next season? And if so, is it the same one you tend to employ every year, or is it specific to, you know, quarterback ADP, quarterback value in an individual season?
For me, right now, when I look at it, I'm leaning towards trying to get a quarterback in the top eight and then waiting a very, very long time to get a second one. Because I'm having this early, I have so much trouble discerning between QB9 down to QB20 almost, that there's so many guys that have potential. They have a lot of upside. They have young weapons. I mean, there's so many arguments to be made for these guys that I'd almost rather not have to choose among them. They all have reasons they could succeed or fail. But to me, there's eight quarterbacks above them that are all clearly a step ahead that seem very certain compared to the other guys. And so I'd like to ideally be getting like the sixth, seventh, or eighth quarterback and then waiting a very long time after that. That's kind of what I'm feeling right now. Who knows? It may change, but that's what's looking like a strong strategy to me right now.
What are those quarterbacks in that 5 to 8 range that you expect to see in your drafts? Like, who are you targeting there?
I think the ones that are kind of lower on that list, and it varies draft to draft, as you guys both know, but I think Carson Palmer may fall. He had a really, really bad end to his playoffs. He's getting older. I think he falls there, but he's one of those guys I would like to target. Ben Roethlisberger in some leagues may fall there. And Drew Brees, I think, is another one that is just criminally underrated after the remarkable decade he has had. But I don't see a reason to think that he's fallen off. So if one of those guys, I don't want to be so specific that I have to have one of them I need, but if any of those guys starts to fall down near QB8, that's probably where I'll be sweeping one of them up.
Yeah, for me, when it comes to that sort of strategy, I just want to feel like I'm getting a value. I want to be able to draft the last guy in a tier, right? Like, I want to see all the other guys in my league draft, you know, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck in the second round, and then I want to land Ben Roethlisberger in the fourth round, because I don't think his production is that much less in that sort of scenario, and I paid a lot less for him in terms of draft capital. But I mean, is that kind of in line with your thought on that, Josh?
No, I think that's hitting the nail on the head, that you want to, like you said at the outset, at the kind of the start of this episode, is you want to look for value on quarterbacks. There's so many two quarterback owners that are just going to rush and make sure that with their first two picks, they get quarterback. And while that can work, I mean, we all know you hit on the right players, you win. I think overall, that's not the optimal strategy. Like you said, you want to really know where tiers are and try and be near the end of them.
How about you, Sal? What sort of strategies are you leaning towards for next year?
Well, I'm thinking right now I'm going to draft Cam Newton at 101, then trade for the 102 pick and take Andrew Luck, and then just walk out of the draft and let it auto-draft
just
for me.
Just drop the mic.
I don't see that being a losing strategy at all.
It's a bold choice.
No, but usually, like, I tend to lean to the studs in streaming because I think it's, you know, the best of both worlds. You can get, you know, an early quarterback one, you can anchor your quarterback duo around, and then get a couple of value picks with your QB2 streaming duo. And that's usually the one I do walk into most drafts with, but no, like, it's not my one set draft strategy. I try to be flexible with whatever draft I'm in. It's always going to depend on your settings, your league mates, you know, two quarterback ADP. Once we, you know, get a clear picture, that's going to play a big part of it. But just looking at, like, the quarterback rankings going into drafts this season, I'm kind of playing around with the idea of just taking, like, two quarterbacks from, like, the mid QB2 tier, and, like, just playing around with the different combinations, like whether it's like a Tony Romo and an Eli Manning, or an Alex Smith and a Derek Carr, like just going into it with like an open mind and just trying to grab two from that tier and just seeing how things play out. Cause that allows me to kind of build out the rest of my team without having to use an early round pick on a quarterback, and then still being able to get two, you know, viable fantasy quarterbacks later on in the draft. Cause I just think there's such a glut of quarterbacks in that, you know, QB2, let's say from like QB15 to like QB23 range, that I would be comfortable with starting this, you know, upcoming fantasy season.
And that's where I'm at, actually, is I'm a firm believer at this point in the late round quarterback strategy, even in two QB leagues. I think most people who play in one quarterback leagues know that that's probably the optimal strategy at this point. And I think that we've gotten to the point with quarterback production where it's becoming the optimal strategy in Superflex and 2QB as well. If only because you're talking about Tony Romo maybe ranked outside of the top 10. You're talking about Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, and then all those young guys we talked about earlier, you know, who could, you know, make the leap that Blake Bortles made this year. It's crazy, but there's just so many good options, to the point where I don't feel any need to spend any of my early picks on them when I could be taking, you know, the top running backs and top wide receivers available.
To that point, sorry to cut you off, just to that point, once you get outside of Cam Newton, who had just a ridiculous year, and we'll talk about him a little more later on, once you get down to the lower tier of quarterbacks, if you go to QB5, just in points per game, Blake Bortles had 19.5 points per game. I can go all the way down to QB23, Joe Flacco, and he had 16. I mean, we're talking about 3 points per game difference between almost 20 quarterbacks. That's such a small difference. And sure, that's one season. You don't base everything on one season, but that's been generally the trend, is all of these quarterbacks, like you said, are scoring well. You'll have a couple of elite ones, but then you have just such good production that it really is hard to say, I am going to be the guy that finds the one that turns elite this year, where we're going to have 20 others that aren't. I mean, that's, you got to be really good at projecting quarterbacks to hit that one guy that's going to jump out.
Yeah, and half the time you just got to get lucky to do it. I mean, you just got to be the guy who backed into Ryan Fitzpatrick, like I was talking about earlier in that home league that I'm in. I I did not really want to draft Fitzpatrick, but he was one of those last guys available when I needed a QB3. And, you know, I rolled those dice and they came up a winner. And that's how it goes. Yeah, I mean, you touched on Cam Newton, and I've been, you know, teasing it this whole time. But let's talk about Cam, because he had an awesome season. Like, number one, basically regardless of your scoring system. And I'm curious to know, like, where you guys feel this ranks in terms of his ceiling. Do you believe that he can get better from this season? Do you think that he's doomed to regress? Sal, where do you think Cam Newton's going to go?
I think there is room for regression, but even if he were to regress, he still has, you know, like top five quarterback fantasy ceiling in him. You know, the 4 years he's been in the league, he's been a top five fantasy quarterback four times. 2014 was like his one down year. So if you want to look at, you know, what could be his floor, you're looking at a mid-tier QB2. And I think that's a little too low for Cam Newton if he's going to be playing at this level next year. You know, he's going to be getting Kelvin Benjamin back. He seems to enjoy playing with these receivers. Greg Olsen is there, Jonathan Stewart. No, he had 10 rushing touchdowns this year. And it's like, that might seem like a lot for a quarterback, but, you know, he had 8 another year. He had 14 his rookie season. So I think all the tools are there for Cam Newton to be the fantasy quarterback 1 again next year. And I think the debate is probably going to be centered around, you know, do you take Cam Newton at 101 or, you know, do you bypass the quarterback position? Because you're really, I think there's about like 5 quarterbacks who you might feel comfortable taking with the 101 next year. But I think Cam's kind of solidified himself as being the guy at the 101 slot. But it all really depends if you're, you know, building your team around using the first pick on a quarterback in a 2 quarterback leagues, which is, no, that's a different question than the one you asked. But like I said, I see Cam Newton just continuing this on for like at least like the next 5 to 7 years.
Is a big factor. I mean, you can look at a guy like Drew Brees, and he's actually been more consistent than Cam. 2014 also happened to be Brees's worst year over the past 4, where he kind of came in around the QB5 range. He's among 5 guys who have finished in the top 12 each of the past 4 years. That list is Brees, Rodgers, Luck, Newton, and Russell Wilson. And I think that's your list in terms of, you know, the top quarterbacks you can consider with the number one pick. I think people will look at Brees and point to his age and say that, you know, he doesn't deserve that consideration compared to the other guys. But it's funny because he has been the most consistent of all of them. In terms of Cam, though, it's just so rare that a player will actually repeat a number one overall performance. And I know that that's not exactly what you're trying to get. You are factoring in their floor as well. And, you know, with Cam Newton, that floor is, like you said, probably QB8, QB9, thanks to all the rushing yardage and TDs that he piles up. But I don't know. I just have a hard time. One, I mean, I just explained how I'm going to be a late-round quarterback guy probably for the rest of my life, even in 2 QB leagues. But just the odds that he repeats just seem small to me. And that's why I'd almost rather try to figure out who the other quarterback to, you know, leap over him would be. And for me, I think that Luck is that guy, and he's the guy that I would take over Cam at 101 if I had to make that choice. Josh, where do you sit on Cam? I mean, if you have 101, are you taking him? Are you definitely taking him as your number one QB overall?
I think the latter question is easier for me than the former, obviously. I think that right now I would say I have to take him at QB1. I think there is much more debate around what you guys have talked about, what you should do with the first pick and how you want to build your team. As far as just regression and kind of speaking to that point, something that stood out to me today that really is astounding is that Cam Newton could have thrown 10 fewer passing touchdowns this year and he would have still been QB1. That's remarkable to me.
That's insane.
I mean, he was that far ahead of Tom Brady, and granted, they both had very different week 17s. Cam Newton threw for almost 300 yards. He had 4 total touchdowns, and Brady did next to nothing. But even if you throw out that terrible week 17 where fantasy players really aren't playing, Cam still could have thrown 4 fewer touchdowns during the season and still been QB1. So I think there's a lot of built-in room where, sure, his touchdown percentage may regress. He may not throw quite as many. but he can still be right there fighting for QB1 numbers. I agree with you. There's probably decent odds that someone's going to jump him, but I also think that he's such a safe pick that there's an argument to be made at 101, especially right now where we're talking in February. There's questions about all the running backs. Le'Veon Bell's coming off an injury. Adrian Peterson is another year older. Todd Gurley isn't really as involved in the receiving game as we would like him to be. And so your typical kind of running back 101, I'm not sure that you can really count on someone. Whereas Cam, I feel like, is such a safe pick there that I'd almost be debating between him and a receiver.
I think it would depend a lot for me on, based on ADP, who I could expect to see at the 2-3 turn. And depending upon what quarterbacks make it back to that spot and what, you know, wide receivers and running backs make it back to that spot, that would definitely inform my choice about what I'd want to do with that first overall pick. I mean, I still am definitely in that avoid QBs in the first round boat. But you are right about Newton's floor. The rushing touchdowns, the rushing yardage, especially in a 4 point per passing touchdown league, which is what we're assuming here, the upside of that rushing and the floor of that rushing is just so big from week to week, where even if he throws a pick, I mean, the fact that he gets one rushing touchdown instead of a passing touchdown could make up for that interception right then and there. How much do you guys value running quarterbacks above passing quarterbacks in general, and specific to two quarterback leagues? I mean, does it change your evaluation? I mean, scoring settings definitely matter, but how do I want to phrase this? Do you give more stock to any quarterback that runs, or only, you know, the elite rushers like Cam Newton?
I do give rushing quarterbacks the edge if I'm debating between, say, a rushing quarterback and a non-rushing quarterback. I do have a mentality where I do prefer rushing quarterbacks because they have that, you know, a little bit of a built-in floor because of the rushing production that you get from them, especially if you are playing in a league where passing touchdowns are, you know, 4 points rather than six. I don't go out of my way to draft only rushing quarterbacks or, like, say, you know, I'm going to draft only Cam Newton and nobody else at the 101. But, like, this past offseason, for instance, I was really into Tyrod Taylor because of, you know, his style of play, and he's going to be a cheap quarterback you can draft. And even if he wasn't that great of a passer, his rushing ability would, you know, be able to bump him up maybe from, say, like a low-end QB2 to maybe like a mid-range QB2 or a low-end QB1. And I find that when you're in like the late portion of your draft, that plays a big part because you want that upside, and the best upside you can get tends to be from those rushing quarterbacks.
Josh, what do you think?
I mean, all of what Sal said is definitely backed up by the numbers. I mean, Retriebar is the one that popularized the Konami code and just the effect that can have on fantasy production. I tend to, as I've said, I tend to be overly cautious at the quarterback position, and partly as a lifelong Redskins fan and watching what happened to RG3. I think I have some, like, PTSD from rushing quarterbacks. So I do get concerned with these quarterbacks that are taking more hits, particularly the ones that seem more prone to those big hits, the ones that are bad at getting out of bounds, the ones that are bad at sliding. If I see those traits, that tends to worry me, even though when they're playing, they may have a little more upside or a little better floor, whatever you want to say, whatever argument you want to make. I worry whether they'll make it through a whole season. And I think that's where Cam really stands out as different than the rest. I mean, he's built like a big linebacker. He clearly can take people on at the goal line, sustain hits, hold on to the ball. And I wish I could remember who tweeted it out, but someone shared the stat that since Cam Newton has been in the league, he's led the Panthers as their top rushing scorer. He just is something special around the goal line. And so you're not just getting rushing yards, you're getting pretty safe rushing touchdowns. I mean, he hasn't had fewer than five in any of his five seasons. And so Cam, to me, stands out as a little different than the rest, that he doesn't make me as worried for the injury risk as some of the other guys do. And that's not an indictment on all rushing quarterbacks. That just is a little bit of a word of caution that while their per game scoring may be good, there are some risks there.
Yeah, one thing that I've noted, and this, it's all based on a small sample size of just the past few years, but it does seem that because quarterback production is generally ramping up, we're seeing more better quarterbacks across the league, or at least quarterback production. Maybe the QBs themselves aren't as good, but the schemes are good. The rules have changed in a way that makes it easier to pass the ball. That when it comes to the top of the rankings, what really does set fantasy quarterbacks apart are those little extra things that they do. In the case of like 2013, it was Peyton Manning throwing 55 touchdowns. In the case of this year, it was Cam Newton scoring all those rushing touchdowns, right? How many fewer passing touchdowns did you say he could throw and still be QB1?
If we include week 17, it could have been 10 fewer.
That's ridiculous. Wow. anyway, but that added bonus of rushing does matter a lot to me personally. And I think you've seen that over the past two seasons with Russell Wilson as well, where he's not totally lighting it up in terms of passing the ball, but that rushing production on top of, you know, solid play everywhere else makes him a top 10 quarterback or a top 12 quarterback every year. And there's something to be said about that. There's definitely, you know, appeal to that from a fantasy perspective. Now, whether or not that means you should be taking those QBs in the first and second round, that's where I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely fair. And it's one of the things I like about the two quarterback leagues is that there are multiple ways to approach it and multiple ways to win. Whereas I feel like, as you alluded to, more and more in just one quarterback leagues, it's becoming clear that you almost have to wait on quarterback. I mean, your odds are so bad if you spend an early pick on a quarterback there that it kind of is forcing you into a strategy. I think that's still generally the case, like you've said, Greg, that you want to wait in a two quarterback format, but I do think there's a little more variety open to owners.
It always depends too on your settings. Like if we're talking like a 10 team two quarterback league, it's a lot easier to wait on the quarterback position compared to playing like in a 12 or 14 team two quarterback league where like,
that's a great point.
Sometimes you'll see like the whole first round be nothing but quarterbacks.
Yeah. And I mean, the other guys still have value too, right? I mean, Tom Brady barely ran the ball at all this year and he still clearly finished as QB2. Those types of passers can still succeed in the league.
But Brady also had 3 rushing touchdowns this year too.
That seems about average for him, and that's what I'm talking about. It's those little things that help separate. Like last year, Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers, while we think of them as being these prolific passers, and they are, they also tend to run the ball more than a lot of other quarterbacks. Not always around the goal line, but I know those guys tend to pile up rushing yardage a little bit better than, you know, the Peyton Mannings and Drew Breeses of the world. And that's why, in general, they tend to finish a little bit higher than those guys on average.
Yeah, I always found that Luck was kind of underrated as a running quarterback. Like, he's not a running quarterback per se, but he runs the ball efficiently when he has it.
Who's that?
Andrew Luck.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it early on was just their offensive line problems forced him out of the pocket a lot. But, yeah. You guys have anything else on Cam Newton? I think I'm all set. I've said what I wanted to say. Or actually, I got one more question for you. Will Cam win the Super Bowl this weekend?
I think the Panthers will win the Super Bowl.
He can't do it by himself. He can't just go out there and, you know.
Well, maybe if it was him and Mike Tolbert 2-on-11. That seems fair.
You got to get that lead blocker out there.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the Broncos did, just because the Panthers are so complete on both sides of the ball. It's an impressive team.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game. I like these sorts of matchups where both defenses are excellent to the point where it's not immediately obvious which offenses are going to be able to produce. I think that came up in the AFC Championship game between New England and Denver. I'm curious to see how the Panthers offense looks against that Denver defense. I think it's going to be a really fun matchup to watch.
I just want to bring up one question because we are talking about Cam Newton and the 101 was brought up a lot. So I'm going to throw this one out to you guys. If you were to not draft Cam Newton at 101, but still were forced to take a quarterback at 101, who would be some of the other options?
I said earlier that I would take Luck. And I actually have him ranked above Cam right now. Check out our rankings on 2QBs.com. Sweet plug. But I think you could also consider Rodgers. You could also consider Russell Wilson. And I do think that Breeze should enter that conversation, although you have to admit that the age is a concern and that he maybe shouldn't be there. Dark horse for me is Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I mean, all of those names are the ones that are up there. I will say that the issue that I have is that people say that Breeze, his age is a limitation, whereas Brady is going to be 39 this year. Breeze is a year and a half younger, and so Breeze has arguably worse weapons. I mean, he doesn't have Rob Gronkowski, but age, he is younger for what that's worth. I think both of them have the age concern. I think Russell Wilson should also be in that discussion. He had another fantastic, particularly in the second half of his year. But as far as regression or reversion to the mean, he had one rushing touchdown this year and still had such a fantastic season. He did have more than 500 rushing yards, and that helps. But I think that Russell Wilson has really improved as a passer. We saw that they can be an offense that throws the ball a little deeper than they had before. He has some intriguing weapons. I think he's arguably in the discussion, maybe not as strongly as some of the ones you mentioned, but as of right now, I have him as my second-ranked quarterback on the board.
Yeah, I think this is all the argument against Cam, to be honest, is the fact that we're talking about all these guys that could be QB1 to the point where, I mean, if you have 101, you would have to choose, but I'd rather wait and hope that one of them slid to me in the second round, and I think that Breeze is a candidate to do that. I mean, even Tom Brady might last until, you know, pick 20 or pick 24. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. One more follow-up on that. If you have 101 and you can't take a quarterback, who are you taking? Sal?
I guess it kind of depends if it's like full PPR, half PPR. It's probably right now, I want to say Julio Jones.
Okay. How about you, Josh?
I think Antonio Brown is my quick gut answer, because I feel very safe about him in most formats. I think he gets the touchdowns and the receptions and a decent chunk of yards, and he's pretty reliable. I think the running backs closer to the season are going to be much more tempting, but like I've said earlier in the podcast, the question marks I have right now in the offseason, I'd probably lean towards a receiver that's generally healthy.
Yeah, once we see who's healthy at the running back position, that'll make the argument a little bit more intriguing. I expect Le'Veon Bell to be in that conversation again, but I agree that right now I'd probably take Antonio Brown. But yeah, the long time to go. Well, I'm sure I'll change my mind about 2 million times. With that said, let's move on. We got a couple Twitter questions. We put this out on the interweb earlier, and Sal, do you want to hit us in the numbers with those questions we got from the tweeps?
For sure, let's go. So this question is from Callie Leightonen at klock831 on Twitter. This question was QB tiers and then where they mesh with RBs and wide receivers in ADP generally. Then he said obviously still early in the offseason. So I think he's just trying to figure out how do quarterbacks, running backs, receivers in a two quarterback league in terms of like rankings and ADP mesh.
So let's frame this in a more simple context. What quarterbacks do you believe will or should go in the first round?
Two different questions that I think will go in the first round. Luck, Rodgers, Wilson, Newton, I think are going to be the four mainstays in the first round. And then Breeze, Brady, and maybe Roethlisberger could sneak in.
Okay. And how about in the second round?
Well, those last three, if they don't go in the first round.
Yeah, let's assume that they don't. I mean, are you pretty confident that they'll all be off the board by the end of the second round?
Yeah, by the end of the second round, I think those seven for sure will be gone.
And I think that's where things start to get interesting, is because at that point, because the QB position is so deep, you can start to rationalize with yourself, like, well, I don't need to take Carson Palmer right now because I can take Tony Romo in the next round. And then maybe you just miss out on Romo, and you say, okay, well, I missed out on Romo, but I can maybe then I can get Eli Manning. To me, that's how the quarterback tiers tend to like flush out. I have a hard time kind of verbalizing this. Josh, can you help me out?
No, I think that's right. That you got to think about tiers, and you would ideally, at least this is how I approach it, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but ideally you say, I'd like to get near the bottom of this tier, but if someone, like you said, snipes you right before your pick, gets the last guy in a tier, the absolute wrong move is to say, okay, I guess I picked the best guy in the next tier. I mean, that just destroys the idea you were working with. It's to say, okay, I guess I'm moving to a different position, and I'll wait closer to the bottom of the next tier at quarterback.
So we don't have ADP data yet for this year, but if we go off of last year's ADP data, this might be able to help answer the question a little bit. There was three Luck, Rodgers, Wilson in the first round. So we had three quarterbacks within the first 12 picks last year based on ADP. And then we had running backs kind of dominate it with a few receivers and Gronk. And I think we're probably going to see something like that this year, where we're going to see about like between three to four quarterbacks go in the first round. So when you're trying to do your, you know, your big board of tiers and trying to play around with the ADP data, your tiers obviously is going to be based on who you think should be ranked, where they should be, where you feel comfortable taking them. But I think you should bookmark about, you know, three to four spots in the first round for quarterbacks, and maybe like another three to four spots in the second round.
I like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. To be honest, at any point beyond that, like trying to forecast beyond that in the draft is kind of silly, if only because what the people are doing in the draft will dictate their next types of picks. Because if anybody who starts off taking Cam Newton at 101 and then taking, you know, Ben Roethlisberger at 212 or 210, they're almost certainly not going to draft another quarterback for a little while. There's no point in having, you know, an elite backup to those two elite options. So that's going to influence where the other QBs fall to. Getting past like the first two or three rounds, I think it's going to vary so much draft to draft that it's not really worth trying to forecast.
And I think just based on the fantasy offseason we had this year and, you know, the year before, there's probably going to be more of a shift to the receivers over the running backs. So instead of having like five running backs in the first round, I think you might see like five wide receivers this year.
Let's say you're going for kind of a late round quarterback or a mid level quarterback only type of strategy. I think this is another good way to think about this question is if that's your plan, how long are you comfortable waiting before you get that QB1? Would you wait until the fifth round, the sixth round? How many picks at other positions are you willing to make? Assuming that the rest of the draft kind of breaks as an average draft would in terms of quarterback selections.
Yeah, I have a hard time doing it by round. I think that Sal's thought was a good one to take a look and see what it looked like. So just looking, if I get last year's ADP, I'm getting down near pick 50. And at that point, this is August of the last season, right around there, you would get Eli Manning, Matthew Stafford, Tom Brady. Remember Brady, we weren't sure if he was going to be playing at the outset or not, so he was falling a long way.
Right.
But you're still getting pretty decent options there, kind of around pick 50. I feel like you can wait longer than that. But to me, it's kind of what you've already said, that it really, both of you have said, it's really up to your league. Your league really is going to determine it. I would set it instead of by round. I would create a list of your rankings at quarterback and kind of have a threshold of, what are some of the last guys you're willing to have as your first quarterback, and really gauge based on how quickly they're going off the draft that you have, instead of really thinking, okay, seventh round is when I need a guy.
So I don't have the ADP data up in front of me, but looking at the stuff that you are looking at from last year, at what point does it start to get dicey in terms of, you know, pick number for your QB1? Like where's the first guy where you would feel uncomfortable?
I mean, it's so hard to say because, well,
In terms of last year's perception, I should say.
Right. And that's why it gets dicey, because Andy Dalton goes pick 89 and you love that pick now. But at the time, I think people felt a little iffy about Andy Dalton. They just really weren't sure he was any good.
I felt very iffy about him.
And so Derek Carr was 83. And you've got to remember, Derek Carr came off a really poor rookie season where it was thought he couldn't throw beyond 2 yards. That's iffy. Jameis Winston, Colin Kaepernick are right around pick 80. And that's where, depending on your risk threshold, those are kind of some of the riskier picks start to fall around. I would say pick 75 is roughly where those question marks start hitting, it looks like.
And I'm just looking at one of the many mock drafts I did last offseason. And this one specifically, I went in with the mentality of doing late round quarterback no matter what. And no, someone took Jay Cutler in the eighth round. And then I started my quarterback run from round 9 to round 12. I went Winston, Mariota, Smith, and Tyrod Taylor. And I think, like, if you're waiting on the quarterback position, like around round 8, is a good time to start targeting those guys. But again, it's going to depend on who's already been taken in your draft. But if you're one of the people that likes to wait and wait and wait, that's about the time when you need to start thinking about the quarterback two tier before it dries up completely.
Yeah, part of the risk inherent with that strategy is that once you do start to take quarterbacks, you kind of have to take them all at once, because at that point, other players are going to start to look for their backups.
Right. And last year it helped too, because we had Winston and Mariota, two rookies who a lot of people were really, well, I wouldn't say high on, but two rookies people thought would be, viable fantasy quarterbacks. Plus, you also had Tyrod Taylor coming on late in the offseason. I just don't know if we're going to have those types of quarterbacks this year. No, Taylor's not going to surprise anybody. It doesn't look like there's going to be a Winston or Mariota in this draft. So it all might depend if there's like some quarterback, maybe like a backup, say like Chase Daniel, who finds himself in a good position, who could be a late round quarterback target.
Right. But as we discussed earlier, those guys aren't going away either. They're going to push a lot of the veteran guys down the rankings. I mean, Andy Dalton is an interesting case because he just had a great year. He'll probably be pretty highly valued this season relative to 2015, but he'll still probably be ranked behind Bortles in a lot of people's rankings. And then, what do you do with a guy like Tony Romo who's coming off injury? Like, the quarterback talent is there if you want to wait. It's just making sure that you end up with, two to three viable starters. I don't know. Do you guys have any more thoughts on this before we get to the next question?
Well, just to go for your point, I think it's going to be more in like that mid-range QB2 tier this year rather than like the late portion of the QB2 tier.
Yeah, that's a good point. What's next, Sal?
All right, our second Twitter question is from at Westmount Whaler. This is Scott, who I believe was my former roommate. His question is, this is a dynasty question. He has Rivers, Matt Ryan, Tyrod, and Winston in his 2QB dynasty. So he wants to know, should he keep all of them or look to deal one or more? I'll throw this one out to you, Josh, first, because I know you're kind of in like the 2QB dynasty trenches at the moment in terms of research and dynasty rankings.
I like all the options he has. Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, Tyrod Taylor, Jameis Winston. I think all of those guys have appeal of different sorts, and he has a pretty good mix there of upside, risk, stability. I really like them as a group of four. And I would say it really depends on the makeup of your team. You obviously, with this grouping, have some concern that Rivers could retire in the next couple of years. I mean, he's younger, but he has talked about retirement, talked about spending time with family. It's not a guarantee he plays another five or six. Tyrod, I don't think, is a firmly established starter going forward, although some disagree with me. In general, I think this is a pretty safe group, though. I think you could move one of the four and be fine with three, and especially if you're in a league that values quarterbacks so highly that you could really get kind of a king's ransom for one of them, I'd be open to it. I'd really would depend on what your league values quarterbacks at and what the rest of your roster looks like, but I think you could safely move one of them.
What level of player would you be trying to get for, pick the guy you'd try to trade first, and what would you be trying to get back for him in a dynasty deal?
I mean, Sal will disagree vehemently, but I'd be looking to sell Tyrod Taylor. I'm not sold on him moving forward, and it's probably something Sal and I could hash out for long periods of time. I know he really likes Tyrod, and you were completely right this year, Sal. I think that he has a ton of appeal right now, and you can probably get a great value for him if you find the right owner. So I'd be looking for, Dynasty, the wide receivers are really what you're looking at, quarterbacks and wide receivers, because of the longevity of their careers and the point totals. So I'd be looking for a really good wide receiver. A lot of leagues, you could be looking at someone kind of flirting with the wide receiver one category, like that tier, for a Tyrod Taylor. So I would feel out other owners.
Someone like Alshon Jeffrey or something
like
that?
Yeah, that's a great one, where maybe an owner is worried because they don't know where he's going, injuries, that kind of thing. Yeah, something like that I think would be what I'd be shooting for if Tyrod's the one I was moving.
I'm very excited for what I've now decided is going to be episode two, the Tyrod Taylor experience, where you guys just butt heads for the entire episode.
Well, I was high on Tyrod Taylor last year just because of how cheap he was and his upside. Will that be the same thing this year? I don't think so, because he's probably going to be drafted pretty high based on his season last year. So I'm not sure if I'll still be in love with Ty God or Ty Goat as much as I was last year. But I can see you trading any one of these four quarterbacks. Really, it all depends on like what is, how his team looks like. Is he a contender? Is he in rebuild mode? No. Does he have a hole at running back? Does he have a hole at wide receiver? Jameis Winston would be the one quarterback I would keep out of those four, just because I think he has QB1 potential for years and years to come. But he's also the one quarterback out of those four who I think has the most value that you can get in terms of trading him. So like if your team is like built now to win and you have these four quarterbacks, I'd be okay like throwing out Winston and trade offers, because I think you could get like a bona fide wide receiver one or a running back one for him. But at the same time, I think Rivers and Ryan still have value, and Tyrod has value. Like, if you can get, like, a Jeffrey for Tyrod right now, I would do that trade as well, too, because, like, we don't know what Tyrod's future has in store. We've read those articles this offseason where the Bills GM, isn't really sold on him. So it could be a chance where you get to, sell high on Tyrod based on his season last year. I think Rivers and Ryan have at least, like, one to two more good years of, value in terms of quarterback position in fantasy league. So I think you could still get a starting piece for them, but there's just so many more questions that need to go with this question to give like a full 100% guarantee answer.
Yeah, in terms of value, it definitely seems like you would get the most in return for Jameis. After that, it's probably a toss-up, but I do think that Tyrod is the guy who has the lowest floor there if you're looking to sell, and because his value is high now, that could really pay off for you. Matt Ryan, he's still pretty young, isn't he? He's a couple of years younger than Rivers, at least, correct?
Same. Rivers is 34. He just turned 34 in December.
And Matt Ryan is not 30 right now. He's going to turn 31 in May. So, yeah, he's got 3 years on Rivers.
Yeah, and for that reason, it seems like they would probably be the most undervalued now, and I wouldn't try to trade either one of them unless you were getting someone to overpay for some reason, if only because Rivers does have the age playing against him, so you're not going to get as much in return for that. And in the case of Ryan, he just had a pretty bad season. So on top of, slightly higher age than Tyrod or Jameis, he also has that stigma of a bad season on him right now, so you probably wouldn't get enough in return for what he should be, getting you in what could be a bounce back 2016. I'm by no means a dynasty expert, by the way. I should have prefaced all of that. But
I think, if you're going to trade Ryan or Rivers, I think you have to find the team in your league that's like one quarterback away from contending this year. That would be okay trading for a veteran quarterback.
And I can give you, this is anecdotal, don't rely on it, I overpaid to get Rivers in a dynasty league. It's a two quarterback dynasty, and this was just in the last week. I sent Jarvis Landry and Julius Thomas for Phillip Rivers, where Rivers is going to be my QB2 behind Rodgers. It is a team that needed a second quarterback, but is a playoff team easily, and with the right pieces could compete. So I think it's generally an overpay to give up Landry and Thomas. Thomas was my third tight end, so a little bit of a strength there I could give up.
Yeah. And that's a great thing about a two quarterback dynasty league, is that all these quarterbacks we mentioned all have different values to every single league mate that you're going up against.
Yeah, I actually play in a one quarterback dynasty where I have Matt Ryan and Tyrod, and I don't know if I'd be able to get anything for either, to be honest, just because, man, like, who needs a quarterback? Like, nobody. But anyway, I think that does it for the questions. I'm good to wrap things up. Are you guys all finished? Anything else you want to get off your chest before we wrap things up here?
No, it's sad to wrap up. It's been good talking, guys.
Yeah. Before we go, I do want to plug a little bit about what you're going to find on the site. We do have rankings. All three of us have redraft rankings for 2016 that we'll go through, umpteen iterations before we're ready to draft. But they're there, the quarterback rankings specifically. We have some dynasty rankings from Anthony Amico, plenty of other great content, draft strategy write-ups from Sal, a QB depth chart that we're going to try to keep up. We'll see how well that goes. And just tons of other great content there, some QB profiles from Anthony as well. Come to the site, check it out. It's 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBs.com. Guys, I'm excited to get this started, and I can't wait to record the next episode.
Yes.
It was good times. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Greg and Josh.
Thanks, Sal.